I want to know everything there is to know about you.
Now I'm going to introduce you.
You must have spotted her by now. She's always there.
Don't I deserve love?
Somebody has to like me best.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Don't Know Her podcast. I am Scott.
And I'm Michael.
Wonderful. Thank you for joining us, Michael. And we are here once again to talk about a star of the screen who we just want to celebrate a whole lot more because maybe they're underappreciated or maybe they just deserve much, much, much more. And we're talking about someone this week who I certainly think deserves a lot more.
Well, it's your birthday choice, it's someone that we don't go a week without you talking about this person.
I always, always gassing on about the one and only Maria Bello. Well, I'll be honest and say that's not entirely true, but when we were thinking about talking about queer performers on screen, when kind of going through a list, she really, really jumped out to me. And then I was like, yeah, you know what, that's exciting. Why don't we put her forward for the birthday episode? Why not? We can make this about her. I can, you know, go down the route of being super interested in her because, you know what, I'm sure she is. But from watching her films, I am now like a mega fan.
Yeah.
So this I am absolutely on board with as my birthday episode. Aww. What a gift, Maria Bello. I knew I liked you, but it turns out I fucking love you.
Yeah, that's so funny. So I haven't thought of Maria Bello. But I've not thought of Mario either. Not since that hot night in Tuscany. No, Maria. Maria Bello, I've not thought about for such a long time. Yeah. Enter Beef. The most recent Netflix... The most recent Netflix show. The only Netflix show I've watched probably are that and Glamorous, which very different standards of quality there, but equally both amazing in my life.
Great, okay.
But Beef, amazing, amazing, amazing show, which we'll get to talk about. But Maria Bello's performance, presence, character, journey as this overly, like, I was going to say overly bubbled, but like she's so stuck in this sort of mind frame of this privilege that she thinks she's so woke and so thoughtful and so respectful, and it's just wonderful to watch. So I was like, what the hell happened here? Like, why is Maria Bello not in everything?
Yeah.
So I was delighted. Hadn't actually realized she'd come out as I don't know what the, like, she's clearly saying the label is whatever. Like the Maria Bello, although she's in a same-sex relationship. Engaged, even if not married already.
Engaged,
Does maybe not refer, use the word queer, maybe to describe herself. But for all intents and purposes, she's part of our wonderfully inclusive spectrum.
Yes.
And I'm so A, delighted to find out she's part of that community.
Yeah.
And B, delighted to reflect on her. I will say it's been a journey with a lot of these films in a way I had not anticipated. I thought this would be way more straightforward. This is maybe the most interesting filmography we've watched in a long time, in that I found it really surprising to watch a lot of these films.
for different reasons.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Wild. And also, like, a lot of them symptomatic of the time.
Yeah.
So it's like it's a capsule going back to watch. Some of these films, even some of the better ones, would not be made the same way today.
Yeah, fascinating.
So she is a fascinating person. But like, what about her, without spoiling what we're going to talk about, it makes you so delighted to be celebrating her on your birthday?
The first word you used to describe her in Beef was presence. And I think the moment she walks on screen in anything, there's just bags of it. Whether she's wonderful, sexy, exciting, I just think she lights up the screen. When she's playing mothers, for example, she's like the coolest, sexiest mum I've ever seen on screen. love her androgynous energy, whether she describes herself as queer or not. She has queer
energy. Yeah, she certainly has a queer energy,
And I think it's so...
Well, sometimes. Grown-ups, maybe less so, but...
Oh, I haven't. That's one of the ones I didn't actually go and
Well, maybe you're lucky.
Maybe that would have soured the whole the birthday extravaganza. But it is... I think she's gorgeous, 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 gorgeous to watch. Like, I'm now very in love with her, find her magnetically beautiful and a totally brilliant performer.
Yeah. Oh, wonderful. Yeah, I agree with everything you're saying. I think she is both like currently, like today, contemporary. I don't think she felt contemporary back in the early 2000s, 90s, the 2010s. But she suddenly feels very contemporary, but also feels like, you know, not Katharine Hepburn-esque, but something about her also could have been around that time. You know, she has the classical kind of good looks and energy on screen. Because you're right, when she arrives, like, bam, like, there she is.
Yeah, and I think there's something about that androgynous energy, if that is the right word. It feels like it is. There is something which I think comes up often when I think about my most loved screen women, like Frances McDormand, Catherine Keener. A lot of these people, I think, have a similar presence.
Well,
to
even
her.
Like, maybe this is probably being overly academic, but I'd say more than androgynous, it is a masculine energy in oftentimes very feminine esque kind of in terms of visually how they can be seen. I think that is it even more so. Do you know more less than, like, say, a Tilda Swinton or someone who is more typically androgynous?
Sure, I hear you.
Yeah, she very much has this power that you would associate with male characters and masculine personalities, I guess. Yeah, it is really, it's really exciting, and when it's utilized, it's good. Yeah, I can't wait to get into the films because now I just want to talk about specific things. But, oh, I'm so glad you're happy we're doing it for your birthday.
Yeah, I'm so happy. I can't believe how happy I am.
And I think, like, another thing which really surprised me is, as she uses the word herself, she's a flâneur. So, you know, as someone
who... I beg your pardon.
She's a flâneur. No, it's a French word, I believe, of someone who's just, like, creative and, like, is eclectic. Is that the word I mean? Like, they're collecting a lot of information and they're very... thoughtful, like they're well read and they're part of a community. Oh. And like there's this sort of sense with her because, you know, she's also written, well, not written, like based on the story, is it, that she got the credit off for The Woman King as well as a producer. And she clearly is just interested in lots of things creatively.
Yeah, and isn't that so exciting? I had no idea she wrote the story for The Woman King. Yeah. And I'm just like, there's just, layers to this.
I remember
it
ending the film and I was like, what? Is that where she's been?
Yeah.
And it was, of course. Yeah. At first, it was like, it can't be the same Maria Bello. And then, of course, she's part of the... Like, I feel like she is a long-standing part of that Hollywood LA community, I assume.
Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping, like, post-Prisoners, maybe her and Viola Davis are good chums or something.
So. Yeah, yeah.
So maybe there's a lot of reasons.
Well, they were the wives, together. Wives together. That makes the film sound so different. Like they have a few scenes. Like that's not
sure.
Anyway, but let me give a little rundown on Maria Bello for your birthday.
Thank you. Go ahead. I'm excited.
She was born on the 18th of April, 1967, in Pennsylvania. Her mother was a school nurse and teacher, and she's Polish American. Her dad was a contractor. Italian American.
Ah.
Ha ha. They were a working class family, Catholic. Probably not surprising to anyone if you're Polish and Italian.
Yeah, yeah.
She attended drama classes, but she focused elsewhere in her academics, majoring in political science at Villanova University.
Okay.
But after graduating, went to New York and worked in lots of theatre productions before her... I use the word big break a lot, but it was a big break, let's say, comparatively, in a short-lived TV comedy called Mr. and Mrs. Smith in 1996, which is not anything to do with the Brad Pitt Angelina Jolie film. In fact, it's mostly seems to be focused on, do you know who Scott Bakula is? The guy who was in Quantum Leap? Like, he's Mr. Smith, and it just so happens Mrs. Smith is also an agent and did a similar thing, but they're not married and all that sort of thing. But yeah, not related, but it was short-lived, so it was just a little dip into stardom, which came more fruitfully when she joined ER in 1997 as Dr. Anna Del Amico. And in 1998, Maria does get her first big film role in Permanent Midnight, which starred Ben Stiller and Elizabeth Hurley. It's from the trailer and all, like, it's interesting. I mean, she seems to be playing kind of a savior sort of role for Ben Stiller, who's off the rails. So she's kind of the safe person. I didn't see a clip with Elizabeth Hurley, so I'm assuming Elizabeth Hurley is also wild. It's like Bedazzled. All
she's
over
the
again.
The devil again.
Elizabeth Hurley, when's her comeback?
Yeah, come on, Liz.
Actually, I have no idea. She might be committing war crimes. I have no idea what Elizabeth Hurley's on to. Remember she always, like, that Instagram? Did we share that during COVID where she just posing? She'd be like, oh, I'm so proud of my son for graduating. But the picture was her in a bikini by a pool.
That's such Catherine Zeta-Jones energy. I love it.
Well, Catherine is trying to sell Casa Zeta-Jones.
I know.
Shit.
Gotta do what you gotta
do. Or Smokey Eye. Love those gals.
Love it.
And Maria's next two films, because that's who we're talking about, not Catherine Zeta-Jones or Elizabeth
Hurley.
Maria's next two films made more of an impact. So she has Payback in 1999 with none other than Mel Gibson, which was a commercial hit. You've seen it?
I have seen that. That was one of the first DVDs we owned, because I think it used to come like in a package. I've said this about another film before, but you used to get this bundle of DVDs if you bought like TV DVD player combos at one point, and Payback was, I think, literally the first DVD that we owned. I can't remember much about it, I'm afraid.
That's such a cute, like, I think the film I think about that we got like free was Fast and Furious, I remember. But when we, like, I was such a brat. I was like, I'm not getting Moulin Rouge on video. That's not the way I want to watch. Like, I need all the stuff. And, like, we did. I mean, I guess everybody would benefit from the new TV and all. But, yeah, I remember getting that. That's actually a really emotional memory. I don't think of much. But I remember, and I was so delighted because I get Moulin Rouge, which I did have on video as well.
Thank goodness.
And I still have that DVD downstairs. Sorry, I still have that DVD in my flat.
What a journey.
What a journey. It's come from all the way from Ireland to London. So just a Ryanair hour-long flight. Actually, it might have been brought on a boat. So
it could have come.
It might be from my original moving.
on the boat over.
Well, the other movie that made a big impact at this time will also have been given for free lots was Coyote Ugly.
Oh, yes, it was. It was in those bundles aplenty.
So Coyote Ugly changed the world in 2000.
Yeah, it did.
And I only watched it for the first time last night.
I only watched it for the first time a few days ago.
How did we miss this movie?
It's so strange.
So, do you want to tell us just the important bits? Because Coyote Ugly has also a lot going on, but nothing at the same time.
Yeah, that's a very good way of setting it up. So, Coyote Ugly follows aspiring songwriter Violet Sanford, who's played by Piper Parabo. She is a small-town type gal who has dreams of being a songwriter for the stars.
But not a song performer.
But not a song performer, because how could she possibly perform in front of people? But she wants to write the songs. So she moves away from her father to New York City to follow these dreams, gets the typically grungy apartment, the only place she can write her music and sing, very well to is on the rooftop in the, you know, the night sky of New York. How romantic, how wonderful. But when you hear the songs, you might not feel so strongly about that connection.
Can you feel the moonlight?
Oh, you're getting ahead of yourself. And then she, on the hunt for work, finds herself going to a bar called Coyote Ugly, where she finds that the setup of this establishment is very much geared towards women dancing on the bar tops, spilling water on themselves as they serve basically nothing but shots and beers to the jeering punters. Naturally, following this, there's a romantic entanglement with Adam Garcia. Is that his name? Yeah. And in it...
Not Andy Garcia. That would be wonderful.
That would have been very different. Ooh, wonderful.
And maybe more sexual.
Probably more sexual, that's for sure. Anything that Mamma Mia 2 has to tell me, it's that he's a sexual fella. Cher agrees. So... Yeah, she finds herself there. She, you know, she doesn't really fit in. She's not that kind of gal, but soon she does, and she gets up and she's singing the songs and she's doing the stuff. And we follow her on this journey until she makes it and she is writing songs.
Whoa.
For Leanne Rimes.
Yeah, and who then records the music video that we all know.
Yes.
When movie is talked about so much and kind of does have a cultural impact in a way. That's something like Coyote Ugly has, in terms of like I can visualize that film and like without ever seeing it.
Yeah.
I had quite high hopes for it to be decent.
Oh, did you? I can't say I did, but
I think it's a bad. I think it's bad.
Yeah, it's not good, but I didn't have expectations of it being good, so I actually quite enjoyed myself watching it. It's the writing is piss poor. The dialogue is.
But there's no intention behind it other than we're just going to make money because this is what women want to see written by men, but by Jerry Bruckheimer. Is that who was behind it?
Yeah, probably.
And the director is David McNally. It just feels both by numbers, but also like even maybe not even as creative as that. In terms of they just threw some things together. I will say a highlight is Maria Bello.
Oh my God,
she owns the whole Coyote Ugly. She owns the film, but she owns Coyote Ugly, the film and the bar. And she's like keeping the police off. She's keeping the men in check. She's keeping the women happy. She's keeping you know, she is owning everything. And she, you know, in something that's not dissimilar to maybe something like Showgirls in terms of tonal shifts. Mm-hmm. She's 1 minute motherly, 1 minute the villain, 1 minute the savior. And she delivers all of that effortlessly.
Yeah.
And you would rather a film based on her character rather than this sort of blandish person whose like character details are so... if not dull, kind of not fun.
No,
so like I don't want to write my own, or I want to write my songs, but I don't want to perform them. Oh, I want to work at your bar, but I don't want to do this. I don't want this. I'm like, whoa. You're a bit of a headache, and there's nothing redeeming about you. And I quite like that actor.
Yeah,
in the other
moments.
Film we watched for Celia Marie, Me and You and Everyone I Imagine, or something, whatever that was called.
I remember the one, yes, of course.
And she was very charming.
You and Everyone Else? Maybe?
Yeah. A lesbian comedy. A romantic comedy. I don't have much else to say about it. I mean, that's quite a lot.
Yeah, I think I was expecting, because it felt like such a... moment, or maybe it's just because of our age, that the time it felt like a big deal and it was everywhere and people remember it, like you say, without seeing it, you know this film. you know, there's not like the dancing on the bars is very fun, but you know, there's flashes of it being kind of a good time and a fun atmosphere to be immersed in at moments. And if anything, I wish it was rougher around the edges and sexier.
That would have been such a fascinating film. That's what I mean about it being.
It's
like,
so clean.
We think this is what women want. So like, this is dangerous. The city's dangerous, but it's not ever dangerous.
No, and actually, it feels like the bar ultimately is quite a safe space. So they could have.
It's a nightmare in terms of God, like, I'd go wild. Like, in terms of wild, how does anyone get a drink? I don't know. Like, there's nowhere to stand. You can't hear anybody. And if you wanted to watch, you probably can't see either. It's just, it's not a functional bar.
Yeah, it's like, it's quite an intense place to be. But I certainly love Lil, a.k.a. Maria Bello, in this. Again, from the off. She is giving me lesbian energy,
and I really just was into it.
And
you really wish that would be more part of it. I also love like how their introduction. I was going to say meet cute, but how they meet is the main character wants a job, and here's someone downstairs moving barrels, and that's what Marie is doing.
Let me take a look at you. Let me guess. Piedmont, North Dakota.
South Amboy, New Jersey.
Same thing.
It's really poorly written, but the bit I absolutely love, like her asking about the arms.
Let me see your arms.
Are you kidding?
Do I look like I'm kidding?
Like, do you do drugs? Show me your arms. And there's just like, in this world, like nobody's taking any drugs. Nope, not even poppers. Like nothing is being done in this film. But I love. Like, that's the part, like, show me your arms.
Yeah, it's tries to tread.
They're not even tired after working all night, you know? Like, there's no, there's no one hungover nearly.
No, it does. It feels, it's a really confused film. You're right. It was aimed at young women, so that's why they felt like they had to do this really dull, romantic film within it. And it's like, no, scrap that shit.
Oh, yeah,
because
that's
crap. He's really rude and mean-spirited and sexless because it's like so judgy of her for dancing in the sport. It's like, why would you ever get back with this moron?
But then she does sell him for a lot of money.
Yeah.
Who is paying $250 for Adam Garcia?
Well, the lady from who voices Lois in Family Guy. What's her name again?
Oh, she's really? I didn't know. I didn't recognize her.
Or was she the one bidding for John Goodman at the end? What's her name? Do you know the one?
Oh, no, I think it was John Goodman that you're talking about. Yeah, I know who you're talking about. But
she's in The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel as well.
Oh, I haven't seen that. And John Goodman's in it. Melanie Lynskey.
Yeah.
They're solid.
Yeah.
Solid people. Now I'm trying to be
Tyra
nice.
Banks.
Tyra Banks, I was confused too. I thought Tyra was leaving.
Yeah, and then very quickly she's back.
And she's not going anywhere.
I'm glad I've
and
seen it.
And she actually wants a sequel. I was reading about that. She's
what?
Really fighting for the multiple secret, yeah.
Okay, well, obviously she can stay away then.
But what would they do in Code Ugly 2?
Same, I reckon.
Well, if they did Magic Mike 2.
And Magic Mike 2 is better than Magic Mike 1,
What? I've seen the first one.
Well, the second one is so good.
Well, the first one's out. I mean, I don't.
No, but the second one is brilliant.
Okay.
Genuinely brilliant. So maybe Coyote Ugly 2 could be genuinely brilliant with Tyra Banks at the helm and Maria Bello maybe.
Directed by Mike Lee.
Again. Interesting.
He'd really get into the nuts and bolts of what's going on.
Okay, we've.
I'd love to see Tyra Banks being directed by Mike Lee.
If only Coyote Ugly was as chaotically exciting as this conversation we've just had. Sadly, it's not.
No, it's boring. Just like this conversation. and I'll continue that in that thread. So she follows Code Ugly with Duets in 2000, China, The Panda Adventure in 2001, and Autofocus in 2002. And that last film is actually probably good to flag because it was a bit of an indie darling. Like, it wasn't Oscar nominated or anything, but it's the film where Greg Kinnear plays Bob Crane, who is a star with a sex addiction. And do you remember, like, it was a bit of a, slow-burning, let's say, indie film that got well-received.
Okay.
And she was a co-star and then his second wife in it. And the reviews are really great. And the clips I've seen, like, we didn't watch this film for it. I was trying to fit it in but couldn't. But, yeah, so I think that was a pretty solid film in her career at that time.
Okay.
But we get perhaps the most lauded film performance she's done so far in her career, in 2003 with The Cooler. So she plays Natalie, and the film is a story of a casino cooler. I mean, I didn't know what a cooler was.
No. This was new to me.
But it is someone at a casino that is basically hired to bring down the luck. So, like, bring bad luck to a table. And to other players, I should say. And that's played by William H. Macy. And the story really revolves around this character and how they meet Maria Bello and their luck changes. Like, that's it in a nutshell. And then you have Alec Baldwin and I cannot remember his name. He's Berger in Sex and the City. Ron something. That's so bad. Anyway, the people that are in charge of the casino are losing their shit because this cooler is fucking things up. Well, more specifically, Maria Bello is fucking things up.
Lady Luck. He met Lady Luck.
Yeah, there's a lot of this. And she also likes tarot readings and things like that. Yeah, I'd never seen it before. It's a film, I should say, when I say lauded, she was nominated for lots of things. And it seems like people were gunning for her to be Oscar nominated for this film.
Yeah, the Golden Globe, the Film Critics National Board, I think. So, yes, there was certainly a lot of excitement there. The film, I'm less inspired by. I think it's kind of fine. I enjoyed watching it enough, but mostly for her, really. I think she is really very good in it.
It's like the Pixie Dream Girl sort of thing in terms of a woman coming into a film about a man who's sad and mopey, and she is a bit kooky, and she livens things up, but she's bringing something, like something I'm not sure was even in the script and what's going on there. The way they communicate, the way she looks, her outlook on the world, like the energy she's bringing, this warmth.
Mm-hmm.
Like those scenes between her and William H. Macy are wonderful. Like just her, there's one bit where she, after they've had an interaction and she notices him, she's waiting at a car after he's finished at the casino. And you know so much just from these few seconds.
Yeah.
And I think that's really beautiful because we have not spent much time with this character at that point. Yeah, I would agree. I think she is really terrific in it. In a way, the rest of the film, I find, even William H. Macy, I'm not that interested in what's going on there. I'm not interested what's going on with the casino. I'm really not interested in watching Alec Baldwin.
No. He got Oscar nominated today, yeah, for this, and it's just like, why?
Wild. It's, I couldn't so believe it when I
yeah,
read that.
It's like there's nothing.
Even if complicated, would have made more sense,
yeah,
to me than.
It's just
the
so
cooler.
Like, no, not a thing.
Paul Sorvino, I should say, who's in it briefly, he would have been a better nominee, mm-hmm, if we're going to nominate someone.
Yeah. It's
for actor, best supporting actor.
Yes, because it's definitely.
It's the Maria show.
But yeah, I hear what you're saying about that. It is a type, but she brings a kind of earthiness, or like, not earthiness, but like a dependability that I think you're describing, that you do want to be around. She has got a natural charisma.
You want to go back to your place?
If this is, I'm not sure I can afford. I can't afford to.
Christ.
Oh, God, I'm sorry. I didn't mean. See, this is what I'm talking about. I've gone and cooled the damn table.
Shut up, Bernie. Shut up. You haven't gone and cooled anything. Not by a long shot.
And there are kind of moments in the film where people are like, why are you wasting your time with this guy? And she's, you know, oh, like, because I love him. But I at the same time, it's like, oh, but I believe this woman. She's convincing me she's so good in this role that to believe things that maybe otherwise I would agree with them and be like, what is he? But she's convincing me, and she is just yeah, she brings so much life to otherwise kind of heard it all before lines and kind of story, you know, side stories and, you know, elements of her backstory. Yeah. And there's a moment where she's talking about her son and the way she talks about him. It's a really, really beautiful moment, which otherwise could have been a sort of pass-you-by moment. But the way she talks about him is beautiful. And there's really fun moments between her and William H. Macy, you know, where they are trying to outdo the neighbours who are having very loud sex and they're naked on the bed and banging against the walls and having a good time. So there is moments of joy in
there. Without having sex.
Without having sex. But it is just her. It's just, yeah, you're right. She's bringing something there which probably isn't on the page and just great. She's just great.
Yeah. She doesn't get Oscar nominated, sadly, for The Cooler. But she does have two films in 2004. She's working with John Sayles in Silver City, and also in a Stephen King adaptation, Secret Window, with Johnny Depp. In 2005, we get Assault on Precinct 13. And we also get A History of Violence, the David Cronenberg film with Maria playing the wife of, God, my mind's gone blank.
Viggo Mortensen.
Yeah, Viggo Mortensen. I was like, Aragorn. Viggo Mortensen. And he works in a cafe. Something happens. And he becomes someone else in terms of his behavior. Enter people such as Ed Harris, claiming that he actually is someone else and he has a different past. And the film goes on that journey, questioning identity, questioning all these sorts of things. I saw this, but this was a biggish film when it first came out.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, film buffs anyway, being excited about it. So I had seen it, liked it, but my memory was so... I only actually remembered the last scene.
Okay.
Which involves William Hurt.
Yeah.
Another Oscar nominee I could live without in terms of... Like, he's grand in it, you know. William Hurt will always be that sort of person.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
fine. If you like him, you like him. That's good. But my memory of the film was so bad. Anyway, I'm really glad to have rewatched it.
Yeah.
What do you make of the film?
Well, this is the film that I would have... This is the film I think about when I think about Maria Bello. So this is the first one which have come to my mind because I remember watching it the first time and thinking she was great. Again, yeah, one of those things that you watch sort of along the way. I think my memory of it was also surprisingly patchy given what happens, I think, because it's,
yeah.
It feels like should be a very memorable film. It is... It was a fun one to rewatch, actually. I enjoyed that I had forgotten because I could sort of go with it again and be like, oh, how does this unfold? And it has moments which are exciting and you don't really know where it's going and then it starts to go that way and then maybe you're like, okay, I see. But it is more about the dynamic between Viggo Mortensen and Maria Bello which really works. And ultimately it's because... she is doing such a tremendous job here. Like, she should have been Oscar nominated for this 100%.
Yeah.
Like, she was nominated for other awards like the Golden Globe and a plethora of other things, including Critics Circle Awards. Why she didn't get the Oscar nomination, I have no idea, because what she is doing here is mesmerizingly good. She is going on this journey of being incredibly loyal to this man, wondering what is happening on... you know, with all that is going on and unfolding, and do I believe what I'm being told and what is maybe going on here, and going through a sort of grief and loss without that necessarily happening, but still being so compelled by this person because she is his wife and she is a sexual being and all of these things. There's so many layers to what she's doing, and she plays it so... naturally, but with so much going on that it is just like, wow, you are just so great, and why isn't everyone screaming your name? Why aren't people saying this is something that should be more celebrated, and why isn't this woman getting everything ever? Because what she's doing here is so good, is so good.
Yeah, and it's really, because I think sometimes wife parts like that are in the film to echo the story more, whereas I think it's, she's actually more integrated than I would have given, you know, a film like this in the early 21st century any credit for. Like there's this, when Ed Harris first turns up, it's, she's the one that tries to remove him from the bar first.
Excuse me, gentlemen. If you're not going to order anything, my husband and I would appreciate it if you would be on your way.
We ate on the road.
It's all right. It's okay.
We really are very busy here today, as you can see.
She's the one who then calls the police. She is taking charge in a way Viggo Mortensen's character is not. And yeah. I think that's really wonderful and really reminded me of more like 1930s, 40s female characters.
Interesting, yeah.
While still being the 90s, naughty sort of wife. So it was a good, it felt really good. And yeah, and I think it's, as you say, like clearly love. The only thing I would say about the film, like I'm not a big fan of violence, so clearly that's never going to work for me. And the sex in it, I just don't understand. Like, this is the other thing when I read about it. And I was like, yeah, but this is so unnecessary to this. I can see the argument for why it's necessary, but I see that as like violent. And I'm not a prude. I'd have sex and sexually explicit stuff in things if they matter to the story. And to this, I just like don't get it. I don't really get it. Also, particularly the more, let's say, aggressive sex scene. Just like, would she have enjoyed that? Would they have enjoyed it?
It's a good point. But, I think it's Cronenberg, and I guess if I'm to give that, I hear what you're saying, but it adds, I suppose, to the conflict of her character going through a real ocean of emotions and, you know, and projecting them in different ways. But yeah, it's, I think she sells something that otherwise could have been a complete dud. Yeah.
Yeah, and if she wasn't powerful,
exactly,
you would those sex scenes would be horrible. Yeah. But I feel like just thinking that makes those sex scenes maybe not best placed.
Yeah.
But I would recommend the film, and I was surprised as well Viggo Mortensen wasn't nominated for an Oscar for it. I think he's terrific too.
Yeah,
I just think the film is like in a way quite old fashioned. And I enjoyed it, I think, overall.
Yeah, me too. No, I think it's a good
film. The word faggot does come up, which I'm not quite sure why. this is just something I'm like, what the hell? Why are we throwing words like that around? But neither here nor there.
Yes, but otherwise...
So now I'm really prudish. Don't use these words. Don't have sex. Don't have violence.
Yeah, I think it's...
When it's gratuitous.
Yes, I hear you. But it does, I suppose it sits, I like that you describe it as in moments feeling like something far more old Hollywood, but I guess done in more contemporary ways, even though in some cases perhaps less contemporary because of what's going on. But I think it's then an interesting accompaniment to Prisoners, which she would do a few years later, where that also feels like you could view that film as like, we've seen this before, it's not doing anything fresh. However, if you look at it as sort of a throwback 40s crime type film, it becomes far more exciting and unusual to have seen on screen in 2015, I think, when it came out.
Yeah. It's the slight tonal shifts in what's happening in both those films which make them, I think, particularly striking.
Yeah, and they're compelling. Yeah. I find them really compelling watches.
So again, no Oscar nomination for Maria. But 2006 is a big year, so she's in the critical hit Thank You for Not Smoking. She's also in The Sisters, Flicka, and Oliver Stone's World Trade Center, and playing Nicolas Cage, who is a firefighter in it, his wife. Again, she's always being like the lover or whatever. None of these films really land with audiences, this continues over the next few years. So I'm not going to run down all these movies, but for instance, we have Butterfly on a Wheel, The Company of Men, The Mummy 3 or The Mummy Tomb of the Dragon, where she replaces Rachel Weisz.
No, I think that's the first place I knew her from.
Oh, really?
So and I remember her specifically, yeah, because I went and saw it in the cinema. I think we'd just been to Florida, and when we were at Universal Studios, the promo stuff was everywhere because there was the new Mummy film going out. So if you were on the Mummy ride, it was, oh, yes, here it comes, the new Mummy film. And I went to the cinema and saw it with my brother. And it is not a good film by any means, but I do remember going, excuse me, where's Rachel Weisz? But then being like, oh, I quite like this woman.
Her accent, there was. I just watched a clip and she's having fun. Like, but yeah. I guess that's where Rachel Weisz is doing a very specific thing. Mm-hmm. And I think losing her may be something, but I have never seen it, so I can't comment.
It's not as natural a fit, but I can understand why they thought it would be like, Rachel Weisz, Maria Bello.
And the kid is suddenly like 30. Like, the kid is so old, yeah. Right? That's
yeah,
the
so
clip
no
I watched.
She's changed so much. It's a different time.
Having a teenage boy would be fucking wild. Anyway, but the film we actually chose to reflect on during this period was 2007's The Jane Austen Book Club, which is directed by Robin Secord, whose screenplays you'll know because they did Matilda and Practical Magic, among other things. So it follows a group of people from, you know, Emily Blunt, who's a teacher who's not feeling her best and is flirting with a young student while her husband is potentially having dalliances with other people. To Maria Bello, who's trying to fix up other people, basically being Emma, Jane Austen's Emma.
Okay.
She's trying to fix up Hugh Dance or Hugh Dancy. God, I don't know his name. Some generic, one of those men. They all look the same to me. With another friend whose husband just left her, and blah blah blah. Like, all these people are coming together to do this Jane Austen book club, and in theory, that could work really well, but instead it's a very sort of bland kind of symptom of that time period, I guess. And Maria Bello is good. She has the best line in it.
Reading Jane Austen is a freaking minefield.
And she does have her Emma experience. But yeah, there's something about, like, but it is a, it's a, it's a very, it's a, it's an, it's a pleasant watch. I put it a bit higher than Cody Ugly, but I'm also not surprised that many people haven't talked about it. I guess another film around this time is Downloading Nancy, which is this horror thriller. She gets an Independent Spirit Award nomination for it. So it's from 2008. Also, because I think these are two films that are worth flagging from this period, I really love The Private Lives of Pippa Lee.
It's Rebecca Miller's film.
Yeah, it's from 2009. Really wonderful. And I just wanted to flag that. Like, she's in it for such a tiny part. There's so many great people in it for such tiny parts, but really effective. And Prisoners. I think Prisoners, to my mind, is the best film she's been in, even though, you know, it's about two young girls going missing.
Mm-hmm.
And Maria Bello, who's married to Hugh Jackman, is one of her girls who is one of the girls missing. And it's not her story. So
no.
We'd follow more the husbands, I guess, and then the wife of the other character played by Viola Davis. But Maria Bello does have the most sort of distraught grief, like soul-destroying sequence in it almost. Like, she is vocalizing more than anyone else the pain and trauma in a short scene, I guess, but very memorable. Like, I didn't rewatch it for this.
I did rewatch
she's terrific.
It. Yeah, and I think it's great. I think it's such a... Because, like I said, it is sort of this throwback thriller-type film that you don't get much of, which is telling a fairly straightforward and kind of isolated story about, you know, these girls going missing and the understandable hunt from these parents and the lengths that they go to in some cases to find them. But yeah, she's wonderful in these small moments. She does have the kind of smallest part, like you say, of the parents. But yeah, she has these real moments of sadness, and you feel it fully from her, and then towards the end, the kind of shifting in dynamics that happens throughout the film and how she portrays her feelings around that, I think, is great. But overall, the film is just a good time and a good time.
What are you talking about?
I just kind of think it is because of, I get a lot of enjoyment out of watching this film because there are elements of it which are fun, which maybe shouldn't be. I mean, Melissa Leo is always an interesting screen presence, and because she's such a peculiar person, but she's so, when she's on screen, she is like a firecracker. You can't not
be completely drawn in a specific sort of way. Yes,
it does. It does.
And Paul Dano.
Yeah.
And it is. Yeah, I think it's such a well cast movie.
Yeah, everyone is really good in this, but it is just that sort of old fashioned hunt type film against the clock, in essence, because of the nature of what's going on. And yes, it's full of sadness and it's full of quite bleak elements describing those lengths that they go to, but I think it's a very compelling watch. It's also quite a long film, but doesn't feel it. It's Denis Villeneuve, before he would kind of go on to do much bigger scale things than this, but you can sort of see someone who is very clued into Hollywood filmmaking, however he approaches it. So
and storytelling in such a rewarding way. And the ending is probably like one of my favorite endings. I think about it often, the very, very
really
end of
interesting
it. I think it's wonderful.
Nice,
because it's simple,
yeah,
but also you're not quite clear what might happen. Anyway, it's to me, that's a great way to end film. And speaking of well cast epic stories, we should also flag that Maria has somewhat of a series around this time with Grown Ups. So you have Grown Ups in 2010, and you've got Grown Ups 2 in 2013.
What a double feature, I'm sure.
I have not seen these films, but from what I've... like, there's a clip of her breastfeeding.
Your son is so cute.
Yeah.
How old is he?
Oh, he's 48 months. That's 4. Yeah.
We meant to stop last year, but he likes it so much, and we don't like to say no. Oh.
And that's the sort of humor we get. So,
okay.
Welcome back. But the cast is good. Like, there's Maya Rudolph and Salma Hayek. That's where the cast is good. No, Adam Sandler can be terrific as an actor.
Yeah, he can be.
But he's not trying in these films, and Chris Rock is also there. But to be honest, the list kind of continues in this sort of way for a while, and there's no more Prisoners or Private Lives of Pippa Lee. So you know, there's Brave Town, The Fifth Wave, The Late Bloomer, In Search of Fellini. I'm really glad that we did flag there was a queer film more recently in her filmography for us to watch. So it's called Giant Little Ones. It's from 2018, and it's the story of a high school student who has a birthday party and is very heteronormative. He's in the swim team. He acts like a jock. He looks like a jock. His friend looks like a jock. And anyway, he's woken up when his friend is fooling around with him in his bed. And the outcome of this is that his friend actually tells people that it was the main character who was doing something. Maria Bello plays the mother. Kyle MacLachlan plays the father, who has, I think, quite, well, recently in their family life anyway, come out and is living as a gay man, which is a really interesting detail in the film.
Yeah.
And it's really about the fallout of this, I guess, accusation in terms of the school, because the way the family react, like nobody else but this intense sort of school atmosphere is behaving as if this is life or death. Like Maria Bello has an amazing moment where she's like,
I thought it was supposed to be socially acceptable these days for kids to experiment.
What?
I'm sorry, isn't that what people say?
We didn't experiment.
And yeah, it's a really solid movie, which I guess it doesn't surprise me that people haven't talked about it more in a way, but also I am surprised because I thought it was really well made. I thought it was a good movie.
I was absolutely baffled that I haven't heard about this one before. I think it's pretty brilliant. I went into it knowing nothing about where it was going, and even though you've maybe given a few of the details there, I still don't think you've given too much that it doesn't still take you on a really surprising journey. The way these characters are dealing with this situation, the lead character, how he responds to the characters around him, I think is fascinating. The whole way through, I was like, I have no idea where this is going. And that sort of catalyst moment in the bed where something happens, initially you don't see what happens. So in my mind, I had it reversed what was going on there. And then it unfolds and what happens and how he's treated and how he treats others. And then the arc of his character and the journey he goes on and the people he befriends and spends time with and all of these things that are playing off of each other, the response to his dad's sexuality, how that impacts his thinking about the situation, how it makes him protective of his mother, played by Maria, because he associates his dad's homosexuality with the breakdown of a relationship, and therefore it's dealing with homophobia from so many different angles. It is interested in identity and what that means to us and labels and or lack thereof. And the film is not interested in presenting its characters on the kind of binary scale that you would so often see things dealt with. Everyone's complex. Everyone has different emotional and personal responses to situations. And the film is the most open-minded take on coming of age or queerness or whatever it might be that I have seen, because I've never seen a film like it. I'm really delighted to have seen a film like it. And I think it's really unusual to sit down and watch a film that, A, you think more people should be speaking about, but B, that surprises you the whole way along. And at times I felt myself willing it and wishing it to go in a different direction than it did, but it also didn't matter that it didn't, because in doing that, it was also differentiating from the norm and veering off a path that I assumed it was going to go down for whatever reason. And it keeps things ambiguous in a fresh way, not an annoying way, or not trying to avoid certain questions at the heart of it. It's just presenting something and going, maybe this is a moment in his life now, maybe it's a bigger thing. But also, aren't those two things important anyway?
I think, I mean, the only thing I could think of why it wasn't successful is because all of these characters, in many ways, is kind of like first world problems. So, it's, and I think, you know, the film operates in such a good way in so many ways, but overall, like, it's maybe not a film I'll reflect on in you know, I think there are films talking about teenage years where things happen that feel so important to you and are so monumental, but they also feel like bigger. Does that make sense? Where this feels very focused. But that's the only reason, because otherwise I'm like, this is great.
As especially within the sort of canon of coming of age films, even just that alone, not even queer coming of age, just coming of age films. I just think it's doing it so well. And the music and the atmosphere and the setting, and the relationships with other characters. There's he then has this relationship with his best friend's sister, and the othering of her character as well is interesting. And she's dealing with her own stuff, which is incredibly tough for her. But there's these moments between them that feels really beautiful. And things that it's like, oh, if this was showing in a different context or the music was different, them sneaking out alcohol and drinking right now would be like problematic. But it shows that as fun and a bonding experience. I'm like, well, that's true and that's great.
Yeah, I think you're right. There's so many moments in the movie where it does really soar because it's latched on to connections between people. I was really touched by it.
I found it really hopeful, actually. I was really glad I seen it.
I think Maria's character is probably it's not that she's the least interesting. I think she's the one that's stuck in the rut more than the, like, Kyle MacLachlan has a gift because, you know, he has homophobia or resentment coming from his ex-wife, but also from his son, who is in whatever way questioning his identity. But he has a journey with the son. He does not really have a journey with Maria.
Yeah.
And that's the gift of a thing to watch. And Maria does have some really lovely moments, but it's not about her character's journey, so therefore it's not about that.
It's not. And you're right, yeah, Kyle is great in this because he gets the room to be great in it. But again, she's elevating this stuff so much. Like, she feels cool. She feels like someone you want to spend time with when you kind of are first meeting her, until, you know, there is the complexities of the situation. But
I think all of them are so good.
Even
the father of the son, or the best friend.
Yeah.
Like, he has little moments and you're like, I don't know who the hell you are, but you have really nailed what is, in many ways, a stereotypical sort of part. And that's the writing as well. I think the writing must be so good here.
And Josh Wiggins, I think his name is the lead in this. I thought he was so...
He was all right. I thought he was
really good. And I think he was bringing, again, way more than was you'd expect, perhaps. Mm. I was really taken with it.
And it's, I guess, it's a bit like, it, you know, we're saying it's strange that nobody's been talking about Giant Little Ones. But I think it's mad. Like, there's not been a movie with Maria Bello starring in it or in appearing in any way since 2020. As we've mentioned before, she did serve as producer and story writer on The Woman King, which is terrific. I think it's, I mean, such an exciting film. Wonderful. If that's the sort of work she's going to produce, let her just keep producing.
Yeah.
But... yeah, I think it is mad. I will say I've ignored TV, so let me just quickly go over it. But after ER, she did appear in a US remake of Prime Suspect, which only existed for 13 episodes before being cancelled. Touch, Goliath, and of course, as mentioned before, Beef, which has just had her receive an Emmy nomination for Supporting Actress in a Limited or Anthology Series or a Movie.
Yeah.
Lucky they didn't call it a drama series, because I'm assuming Succession and White Lotus would have pushed her out.
So that's a good job for
Although
her.
It seems like she's so loved within Hollywood. We say that, but she still has an Oscar nomination. Also, very importantly, she is very active in social causes. Courses, I was going to say. She loves a social course and causes. She co-founded the Harlem not-for-profit arts and education program, Dream Yard Drama Project for Kids. And she has also released a book. Love is Love. Questioning the Labels We Give Ourselves. And that was in 2015. And that was based on an article she'd written. She's on TED Talks. You can listen to it.
Okay, cool.
I think, I can't think of the publication now, but I'll link it in the description. So, Love is Love. Sorry, I sound like I'm Carrie Bradshaw. And just like that, Maria Bello has an Oscar.
Let's wish it into existence.
So, what are your final thoughts on Maria? What do you hope for her future? What do you hope for our future with Maria?
More. Just more and everything. And maybe off of the Emmy nom, maybe we will see more. I just think, God, I find her irresistible to watch now. Like, I wouldn't watch anything with her in and find her irresistible to watch, I'm sure. So I do just want to see...
Well, I dare you to watch the Jane Austen book club then.
Okay, perfect. I will. That sounds like right up my street, to be honest, so I will be watching it.
Do you have any specific wishes?
Yes, I would like to see her in a Nicole Holofcener film.
Oh my God, I thought you were saying Nicole Kidman. Like, that could mean anything.
Yeah.
But yeah.
That could.
So, but no, Holofcener means something more specific.
Yes, it does. I reckon she could write very well for her, and I think she'd be the perfect leading woman for one of her films, so I'm very sold on that idea. And then tangentially, because Nicole Holofcener wrote the original script for Can You Ever Forgive Me, it made me think of her in that world, and that also excited me, and probably working with Mariel Heller would be a perfect mix for her. So any of all of these things, separately to avoid the conflicts which probably occurred during the making of that film.
Well, that's only because Julianne Moore put on a fat suit.
Well, exactly.
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't remake that film anyway. I think it's perfect.
Exactly.
I definitely don't want to see Julianne Moore walking around in the fat suit being a lesbian. That's certainly not what I need.
No.
As much as I love Julianne.
True.
Walk on me.
Oh, my gosh, okay.
Hurt me. Well, mine, you see, I think this is more based on beef and something that I don't think we saw enough in her filmography, is I want to see her be as playful as can be.
Sure.
And I was thinking how much fun she could be in a Yorgos Lanthimos movie.
Oh, yeah.
Because she can straddle, you know, power and fragility and playfulness and silliness all at the same time. So I think she would be perfect.
Yeah, and they've recast Rachel Weisz before, so
just
she's
going to
replace her once again. Yeah.
Well, I can't really gauge them being the same sort of tone. But yeah, because in my mind, Rachel Weisz is like hyper feminine in a way that is, like, she has power and everything, but I think Maria Bello is not, like, that's not what she's
doing. No,
but anyway, who am I to say to be casting anything? But
no,
I would have
Yorgos
Lanthimos, and I would have, like, why couldn't there be some sort of Yorgos Lanthimos movie based in some, like, the fashion industry or something?
Ooh, okay.
And we have Maria Bello as somebody in charge of a company or marketing, or, you know, she's in charge of marketing. She's doing a marketing campaign. Sorry, now I'm just stealing the story to Glamorous. She's doing a marketing campaign for a fashion brand, and she is at the end of her kind of thing, of like, she needs to reach a lot of goals, and she's from old school, and she needs to get into, like, digital age to be able to to connect with the young people. I don't know, something's there.
Yeah, got it. I believe you.
So, Yorgos, Maria, thank you. It won't win her Oscar, I would say. But
we'd get such joy out of it.
She doesn't need. She might win the Best Actress Award at Cannes.
And isn't that much better?
It is. All the greats have that. So happy birthday, Maria. No, happy birthday, Scott. Happy birthday to anyone who has had a birthday.
Thank you. Thank you. Happy birthday, everyone.
And where can people find us if they want to wish you a happy birthday?
You can wish me happy birthday on the social medias, in whatever form they are now, but Instagram, Twitter, for now, at don'tknowher_pod, or you could email us, if you like, at don'tknowherpod@gmail.com.
Yes, and please do rate, review us, share with friends, do whatever you would like. But yes, reviewing really helps other people, rating even, and reviewing really helps people find us. So yes, so once again, happy birthday. Thank you so much for bringing Maria to the table.
Yeah, I'm so glad I have. It's literally, I've got a new favourite actress that I wasn't sure I had. So what a birthday gift for me.
Exactly. I cannot wait for the excitement we're going to share in person or WhatsApp or whatever form when she is announced in some exciting new project.
Yes, and then that's the real gift.
Because maybe she'll win the Emmy and that'll be it.
I think that would be so good. I hope she does.
All right. Well, we're wishing you the best, Maria, specifically, but everyone else.
Yes, exactly.
And you too. Well, thank you, everybody.
Thank you all. Have beautiful days wherever you are.
Bye.